freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Brock and Salk podcast. 2 weeks in a row now we've gone without a football game. It's so hard. Oh, I guess there were some last week. It's just the championship games. Those stunk. Feels like 2 weeks since we've at least had a decent football
game. You didn't chart the Pro Bowl?
I didn't chart it. I didn't watch it. I missed the Pro Bowl this year. It's the best thing about not doing a daily radio show. I didn't watch 1 second of the Pro Bowl.
Takeaways.
I didn't watch any of it.
Did we do takeaways and tidbits from last year's Pro Bowl?
We probably did. Why did anybody listen to that? What a terrible idea. Did you watch the Pro Bowl?
I did not watch 1 second
of
it.
Okay, good. I was
I actually watched the competition the day before, the throwing competition.
I saw Russ. People were saying Russ is a cheat code because he was throwing it through each circle.
Lamar Jackson hit a zero.
Zero.
Yes. Well, that's not really his thing.
He had a safety on another team that had more points than he did.
But he's accurate. Yeah. But he's an accurate passer.
Very accurate.
Devontae Adams more
he's
accurate.
More accurate, but he's, no one said he was accurate.
Ooh, he's really inaccurate.
But he and Russ didn't run like a 40 against each other.
No.
Okay,
no,
good. Because no, no, yeah. I don't like that. Yeah. This is Colin Cowherd once said. I don't want to see that. I mean, if they run a 40, what does he beat him by right now?
Oh, I think Russell's a 4.75 guy right now, and I bet you Lamar's a 4.4 guy right now, and I bet you Lamar's a 4.4 guy.
What was Russ coming out of college?
4.58, 4.55.
You think he's only lost 0.15 seconds in that
point
time?
4.55 to 4.75, 4.78. He's running faster than 4.8. He's still a sub 4.8 guy. There's sub 4.8 guys, there's 4.5 guys, and there's really twitchy fast. And it's amazing the difference those little tenths of a second do make.
I guess that's fair. And Lamar is just in his own. He's in his own category.
Okay, that's enough Lamar, Russ. Let's get to how you and Jim Moore are
spirit animals.
Let's go.
No, I don't want to.
Let me hear about this.
I don't want to talk about it.
Every email now, have you guys noticed this, Kyle and Howdy? Like almost every email is, well, you know what? I was listening to Jim Moore, and you know what? I totally agree with Jim Moore.
Page.
You know what? And you know, as it turns out, me and Jim Moore, like, since you've been removed.
Texting with Jim last night.
Since you've been removed from the Daily Show.
You realize.
You're basically the go-to Salk. I mean, what you got, go-to Salk? What do you have here for me?
I'm in Jim Moore's camp. For years, I was in Eldrin's camp, as you know, and now I'm in Jim Moore's camp.
Uh-huh.
It's time to trade up. It's time for the Seahawks to trade up. It is. This is the year for them to trade up, and Jim kind of went through his arguments that it's time to trade up, not down. It's a good column here at 710sports.com, but I agree with him. Last year, they added plenty of depth. Right, they ended up with all the picks that they did, and last year wasn't really the year. Their roster was in such trouble, top to bottom, and they didn't have a lot of money spending money for the free agency. They didn't really have much of a choice. They needed to add all of the depth they did last year, and by the way, that depth worked out. It carried them to the playoffs and won them a game in the playoffs, and you know, nearly won them another. So they did a really good job with it, but. They just don't have enough star. They don't have enough star power. And we talked about that last year, too. The same was true last year. I just don't think they had the ability to go get it, given sort of where they were.
Given having to pay Russell and figure out the whole Frank thing and having four draft picks.
Right. And so they did a good job. Frank for Clowney. Okay, that's, you know, assuming you can keep Clowney. I think that's at least even in the star category. Although, man, Frank is acting like a star at Media Day and all through the Super Bowl week. I mean,
he's got his peacock feathers.
Oh,
out.
He sure does. I mean, crazy hats and glasses, and they haven't seen a defensive end like me. I mean, like he's making it the Frank Clark show.
You remember what
in
G,
Miami.
You remember what G said that one time he was in with us about paying Frank? He's like, you don't pay Uncle Frank, like that crazy uncle of yours who comes to party. Like, that's Frank, and you don't give that crazy uncle tens of millions of dollars.
And yet, he performed this year. Give him credit, because I didn't think that would happen. We talked a little about this last week. I was worried that if you paid Frank Clark, he would not just go a little nutty like he is at the Super Bowl, but that he just wouldn't be as good. And he has been. He's been a little nutty, but not in a bad way. I think this is generally fun. Cool stuff. I like him talking a little smack and preening around. I got no problems with that. He's not getting in trouble. He's not, you know, he's not doing dumb stuff on or off the field. He's just having fun with it.
He ran for 70 yards. They call him the best rusher in the league. We're sending this home early.
Good for him.
Yes.
He's just having fun with it. I'm there for that. Good for Frank. But you replaced him with Clowney. Fine. You still need stars. And maybe they can get some of that through free agency. We've kind of talked through some of the free agents that are available mm-hmm. this year. But I do think this could be a year to trade up in the draft and find somebody that can actually be a difference maker on your team.
I'm about framing it this way. And I'm actually going to give you one guy that agrees with you. And it's a little bit surprisingly so in just a second. But instead of just depth and stars, how about your middle class? The Seahawks middle class is taken care of, right? You know, they've got a ton of middle class, mm-hmm. a ton of just
who
you know, solid
in that
players.
Group?
Oh, the Trey Flowers and, you know, just the solid players on your team. A bunch of your linemen are solid players. I think role players that understand their role. Bradley McDougald is a middle class player in the league. Right, you got your middle class is taken care of and kind of contractually in some ways, too. You got a bunch of those guys at numbers. DJ Fluker, kind of numbers you like. But you're talking about the upper crust. Right, you're going to watch a Super Bowl, and you're going to watch a $40 million a year quarterback in Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
That's what he's going to get this offseason. It's going to be a $40 million a year. He's an absolute star. You see a Tyreek Hill. You see a Bosa. You see, you know, it's just the star power, the upper class, the upper echelon of talent. Instead of Jim Moore in the column he wrote, how about I give you Russell Wilson, who at the Pro Bowl...
Are you saying that me, Russell Wilson, and Jim Moore are all on one page together?
Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
The power
Holy Trinity.
Trio.
Three minds that have always been alike once again reconvene over the Seahawks draft strategy.
And it was Jim that put Russell in the Hall of Fame year one. And from day one said best quarterback in Seahawks history. Said it before anybody else said it, even before the House of Wilsonism. He was the prophet out there. He was really the Old Testament prophet.
The one crying out in the desert, yes. Make way for he who is greater than I.
That's exactly right. Here came Russell, and there's Salk, and there's Jim Moore.
Over there.
Yes, and here comes Russell Wilson at
right,
the Pro Bowl.
Let me hear it, for God's sakes.
Are you confident, Russell, that the pieces are in place on this team
to take the next step? I think we need a couple more. I think Jadeveon's a big-time guy that we would love to get back. He was so good in the locker room. He brought so many, you know, just havoc plays to the field. Hopefully we can get a few other players there on defense. And then also on offense, we have a great offense, but I think we can always add more pieces. And I think that's going to be the part that's going to be great with John Schneider and Pete as well in terms of this offseason's free agency. Free agency is very, very key. To get superstars on your team and try to get great players that can fill the space. And then the draft. So we always do a great job in the draft, and that's going to be really important to get some young stars up and coming.
Who's that guy? That's not Russell Wilson.
Oh, yes, it is.
It is not.
Russell Wilson 2.0, latest software update from Apple, comes through with an amazing new ability to speak truth to power.
What power?
It said, hold on a second. I got Jim Moore in one ear. I got Salk in the other ear. They're both telling me I need more stars.
Who is this person?
Speaks to me.
Who is this person?
That can't be Russ. He said actual things.
Yes.
Wow.
He said we need a couple.
And that wasn't talking with Jake. He didn't say anything like that to Jake.
No.
Or was that Jake? Play the beginning of that again. That's not Jake, is
Jake?
It? Is that Jake?
Who was
I know that Jake's his buddy.
On this team.
I think that's Jake. Yeah.
Yep.
There you go.
Sounds like Jake.
I think that's Jake Eve. Sounds like him. Yeah.
Bro. Russell Wilson saying we need a few pieces.
Yeah, not only that. Defensively. Because it was kind of like, yeah, we need some pieces on defense. Yeah, you could always get better on offense. That's how I heard it anyway. Of like, hey, we need help on defense. We need some stars over there. Yeah, you could always get better on offense. Yeah, whatever. Make sure that the defense isn't what it was this year because we need some help.
Did I hear
over
him
there.
Say even superstars at the end of it? Like
I did.
At the very end?
In
like,
free agency.
Whoa.
I know.
What is
going
on?
And we always do a great job in the draft.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll take care of that end of it. But is this the now empowered Russell?
Yes.
Is this the this is my team, Russell?
Yes.
Is this the, I've heard this from my agent and the people around me for a lot of years, and I've always been the one publicly to kind of quiet it and just not say anything?
Free agency is very, very key to get superstars on your team.
You're saying you think he's brainwashed? Like
well,
he's
I think that's your version of what's happening here. I would say this is what happens when, unfortunately, Russell's unchecked by Doug Baldwin. This is the Russell that needs to be brought down a peg or two. And this is what, thankfully, Doug was here to help
Richard Sherman's in that locker room. Russell Wilson would have stayed humble.
That's right. Wouldn't have said something like this. Wouldn't have talked about how they needed more stars. Not with Doug around to tell him that he was rotten and not that good at anything. Darn right.
Sending video out. Sneak attacks.
Just saying, without those guys around, he's run amok. He's basically trying to become the GM and the coach now.
Did Russell read Jim's piece? And say,
know.
You know what,
good
we need
question.
Some we need some stars around. We need sir, this is, and not to like blow it up bigger
so are you,
than anything,
are
but
you
in 8
it?
Years we've never heard Russell say this.
No.
Ever. He's never done this.
How could he not? The guy looked around, watched this team this year, and was like, okay, there's like a 2-14 roster that I brought to the playoffs at 11-5 and won a game.
No, I think that part of it, I'd question
Brock,
some of that.
If Russell sat on the sidelines and watched that defense all year long, read your stats again. Everything they were 30th through 32nd in the league.
Yes.
Russell's not blind. He may not show it on his stoic face while he's watching a game, but he's not blind. He can see the fact that the defense is giving up yards and chunk yards and that they're giving up touchdowns and problems in the red zone and can't get off the field on third down. He knows that he didn't get a chance to go back and win the Green Bay game or at least tie it. He knows that he had to watch Jimmy Graham, of all people, catch that ball and roll over Leno Hill for a first down. Russell's not blind. Yep. He's just like anybody else. He watched the game, except he knows football a little better. And so he pointed at it and said, you know what we need is help on our defense. Go find it in free agency in the draft. Get me some stars.
Is this off-brand? Is this off-putting?
I don't think it is at all.
You don't think it's off-brand and off-putting just a little bit?
No.
I don't think it's off-putting, but I think it is off-brand.
It's off-brand for sure.
It's off-brand.
Because you never heard it, at least publicly. I'm sure privately he's clamored for it, but publicly he's never been on the record. I'll give you three reasons why. I think there's this little step beyond all the empowerment, and this is his team. I'll give you three reasons. Number one, Quandre Diggs. Number two, Jadeveon Clowney. And number three, DK Metcalf. Three different stories. One in season that showed you like, whoa, when you just bring a guy that is maybe not upper class safety, but he's no middle class player, this dude's got some legit upside, and look at what it did to our defense. And then the move in basically free agency. I know it wasn't a free agency expenditure. It was a trade, and he gave everything away, and he did it in a creative way, in a Schneider way, to bring Clowney in. But in essence, you know, he was a rent-a-player this year in the offseason. You brought him in, and he was an absolute star and wreaked havoc and a big-time player. And then you take the player who Russell said from day one could be a Hall of Famer. You give me that kind of upper-scale, upper-class talent that's 6'4", 6'3", and 220 and runs 4.3, and give me that. Give me stars. Don't give me Leno Hill. Don't Trey Flowers. Don't give me middle-of-the-road linemen. Don't give me converted D linemen. Just give me some players with some legitimate upside, and you saw it this year and the force that those three guys made. It wasn't just me taking a 2-14 roster.
Yeah.
Those guys,
they need some physical freaks.
Big-time years.
They need some physical freaks. They need some, and it's not just looking at his own roster. I'm sure it's looking at the two teams that are playing in Miami while he was getting ready to be in Orlando and saying, all right, hold on a minute. Look what these guys have over
it's
there.
It's being at the Pro Bowl. You're around Alvin Kamara and when you're around these guys that are a different
too.
Twitch.
But also looking at Kansas speed. City and saying, okay, Patrick Mahomes is throwing to who? He's throwing to Tyreek Hill, and look at the weaponry he's got. He's throwing to Sammy Watkins, and he's throwing to Travis Kelce.
Yes.
And what's the other guy's name? He's really good.
Mecole Hardman.
Yeah, Mecole Hardman.
The rookie.
That dude's fast.
Fast.
Really fast.
Beyond
right?
fast.
So it's looking at that group, but also I think it's looking at, more importantly, looking at San Francisco and saying, hold on. Look at the way they get after you with four. Look at the way that defensive line gets after
you. DeForest Buckner's a creature. Eric Armstead's a creature. Bosa's a creature. They're creatures. Ford is a creature.
And look at the way their linebacker. Look, if Dre Greenlaw doesn't stand up your 200-pound tight end at the goal line, maybe you're hosting that game, but you're not, because he's just not big enough to handle Dre Greenlaw, who knocked him backwards.
If I'm Russ, I
am a little jealous of a lot of those other rosters and saying I need some of that on my team. And by the way, I'm good enough that if you give me some of those, I have enough pieces on offense to do what I need to do, because I feel that strongly about myself. That's what I loved about Russ's comments. I don't think he's saying like, hey, I need help on offense in order to make me look good. Mm-hmm. He's saying I'm doing everything I can. Give me whatever spare part you need on offense, and I will make them great. But I cannot make the defense great.
Mm-hmm.
We did what we needed to do this year. We held on to the ball. What do you have? 5 picks all year, whatever it was. I mean, like, he didn't turn the ball over.
Yeah.
But I can't make them get Green Bay off the field when I need to get the ball back one more
time. So do you think it is harder than ever? And this may be another good study for you, Howdy. You're in the season of studies. Your free agent list was impeccable, by the way. Did he send it to you? Did Howdy send you his manifest?
No, I have him blocked on my email.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I'm not allowed to
get return to sender every single time.
Oh, man, it went to my
return
junk
to
mail.
Sender
you know,
again.
I don't check that folder. I'm sorry.
Howdy has my old earthlink.net address that it goes to.
He never sends anything back.
But I wonder, honestly, if there are just less because of what the Seahawks did in 11 and 12 and 13 in those drafts, because people will point back and say, hold on, you found Cam Chancellor in the fifth round. You found Richard in the fifth round. I wonder if those guys are just so hard to find now that the rest of the league said, yeah, you know what? If you got a special talent and a special quality and you're a freak show and you got a unique gift that those guys had, they're not waiting around to the fourth or the fifth or the sixth
round. Even more so, you had so much success that the league is looking at the type of player you wanted and they're taking them early.
Correct.
Right? I mean, so.
So this plays to your initial point.
You used
to
be able to get value in a tall corner because nobody else wanted a tall corner. Well, now there's 5, 6, 7, 12 other teams that also want tall corners, and they haven't had as much success.
Now,
as
I say that out of my mouth,
so they're picking earlier in the draft.
As I say that out of my mouth, the name that just pops right back is the name I said earlier, and that's DK. And the fact that he was the last pick of the second round, how is that guy at 6'3", 230? Well, he's injury prone. He wasn't terribly productive.
Yeah, he took a risk.
He had a horrible agility test. He didn't run many routes in college, but you took a risk on a guy that had legitimate star power upside.
And they've done a few of those, though. I mean, let's be clear. Take a look in that second round area, and I can give you three picks, all of whom were big risks, two of which worked out, one did not. And it's actually a better hit rate than you would think, right? Frank Clark, major risk in the second round. Based on, you've been kicked out of Michigan, right? You have his past. I would say it worked out. We could have an argument about whether or not they should have gone down that road.
He became a $20 million a year player.
Absolutely. And he was a really good, solid player for you after getting him in the second round and was, for the most part, a solid citizen while he was here, other than when he clocked Jermaine Ifedi. Number two is Malik McDowell. That did not work out. Another risk guy in some ways.
The worst failure they've had.
Absolutely. And then the third would be DK Metcalf. Three guys that you take in the second round. That risk has much more to do with injury history than it does with his physical capability or his mental capability. But, hey, two out of those three actually worked out in terms of the risks.
Chris DeMichael, not so much. Bobby Wagner, yes, he did. So, yeah,
Jaren Reed was a guy that got in the second round that they thought was a first.
Yes. Yeah, it's another
first
pretty round great. Yep. So I'm not saying that they shouldn't take second round picks or anything like that, but if you want to run that same exercise into the first round, it doesn't look quite as good, right? Mm. That's where you end up with L.J. Collier. That's where you end up with Jermaine Ifedi. It's where you end up with James Carpenter.
Rashad Penny.
I mean, like that grouping is, as much as I still think Penny may have some success ahead,
for Rashad Penny.
I think it's pretty clear that was not a first-round pick that you needed to make. So, all right, that's where they're picking once again, right? Yep. 27, is that where they're at this year?
Yep.
I'd kind of like them to be at, like, 7.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you think any of that success they had with those Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, Chris Carson type guys led to kind of being a curse that they fell back on? Well, we can get a starter later. We can take a risk here early in the draft because we know we can find value.
It could be. I would guess. And I think if John Schneider is, you know, figuring out how to download a podcast, which there's no way he can do.
Maybe
let me
Tracy
just be clear. There's no way John Schneider has listened to this podcast because there's no way he can download
this. You know where I want to send him? I want to send him to brockandsalk.com.
Yeah.
Not brockandsalkpodcast.com.
Not the podcast.
No, John, if you're listening.
The website that's in Mandarin.
Yes, it's a betting site in China.
John's not listening. Let's be clear. There's no way he can figure this whole thing out. But... you know, I think if he were to hear this conversation, he'd go, you guys are being knuckleheads. You're crazy.
Well, that's
Here's
obvious.
The answer. Have as many picks. It's a crapshoot.
Yep.
Have as many picks as possible. Doesn't matter. And there
and
is
by
a,
the way, did he like these last 10 years of the winningest decade in the history
right.
of this program? Did he like two
I
trips
did,
to Super
yeah,
Bowl?
Yeah, I think we all did.
Hey, Russell, a quarter of the time you've been in every single year, save one, you've been to the playoffs. Have you liked this little run? Why are you asking me for superstars? If I want to put on that hat, if I want to be John and the family, like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hey, Russell, cork it again. Don't tell us how to do our job. We don't tell you how to do your job. We try to supplement you with everything we possibly can.
And
we've given you a pretty good group of guys.
Hold on. They definitely tell him how to do his job. That's quite literally part of their job.
You've heard Schneider say that publicly?
What?
Right, where he's going to like criticize Russell or say,
no,
hey,
I
we
didn't...
need Russell to do this. I don't think I've heard
we
of
need Russell
to
take
that.
Care of the ball and let the defense
absolutely.
In the run game win for us.
That's what they tell him to do, and that's what he does.
And by the way, Russell Wilson is absolutely right. They've been trying to scrape the bargain basement barrel for free agency since the day he got here. They have never gone out and identified, you know what, this is one of the top three players at the position that's available in free agency.
That's a
I'm
good
getting
point.
That guy.
Now, it worked for them with Averill and Bennett.
Yes, and it never worked again. Their free agents do not make impacts.
Bradley
McDougal's the only one I can think of that's even made an impact, and even he had a down year last year. And he was a second wave guy. He wasn't even the first wave. Go out and identify guys who you know are good at this position, have been good, and project to be good, not guys who are legitimately just bargain basement guys.
I can't
argue
like
that. You like Jamarcus Webb?
No.
Bradley, what do you call Bradley Snow?
No. Bad wet towel? No.
Don't you think
you
Ziggy Ansah?
Credit for like Fluker.
Ziggy Ansah's got to be a part. Ziggy. No, that doesn't mean you shouldn't also get second wave guys. I mean, they've hit in the second wave a few times
and gotten
second wave kind of talent. And that's what Fluker is. He's what they needed. That was a good pickup for them. That's
good
not a criticism.
Class. Kendricks is a good middle class.
Yeah, but I'm
McDougal's
with Howie.
A good middle class.
You've never
Eddie Lacy's the Luke Jokels.
Yes.
Well, those are the ones that specifically didn't
work. Giant, enormous holes.
That what you haven't done since Averill and Bennett is you haven't taken somebody, a second-day free agency guy, and turned them into a first-day talent, right? The same way with Sherman and Cam and Doug, you got guys either in the later rounds or undrafted that turned into being, you know, Seahawks Ring of Honor kinds of guys. You haven't done that since. And so if you're not going to, you can't keep, you know, pointing to what you did 10 years ago, nor can you continue to point. Yeah, you have had success, but a lot of that success was on the heels of what you had done then. This team needs more talent because this year it was Russell Wilson and.
You know, the last time.
It just was.
You know, the last time that if like John and Pete are going to listen to Russ and they're going to say that, and they were all down with star-studded Orlando Pro Bowl, and I guess Pete was the cat's meow. Mm-hmm. Everybody just.
Well, I wanted to get to that next because that's important as you start talking about bringing in free agents.
But you remember the last time they took some of this legitimate risk and really brought in some superstars was Percy Harvin and Jimmy Graham. And by the way, that other corner, who was that veteran tall?
Kerry Williams.
Oh, terrible. I mean, just a disaster as well.
But again, not one was top free agents.
I mean, Kerry was a pretty big.
He was good, but he was not one
Percy
of the top.
Wasn't the whole thing about Kerry Williams that they got him because he'd been cut instead of as a free agent, so they didn't have to give up
a
comp pick?
Yes. Correct.
Well, that says something about him.
Well, he didn't know the kick step. Okay, they were going to teach him their fundamentals, and it was going to totally change it.
Yeah, and we've talked about it. Jimmy Graham.
And Jimmy was not a fit.
No, he
wasn't. Percy was a horrendous decision.
Who helped them win a Super Bowl?
Who just was not a fit.
Who helped them win a Super Bowl?
He did.
What was his contribution to winning the Super Bowl?
One kickoff return.
So they would have won 35-8 instead.
Yes. That ended the game, though. To be fair,
it
that ended the game.
He was largely irrelevant.
Yeah. He had one kickoff return against the Vikings.
Of this like 10-year kaleidoscope of all of these moves the Seahawks have made, the John and Pete and Russ and all of them together, man, they've done just about everything.
Mm-hmm.
They've made trades for Marshawn that worked, right? They've had late round picks that have worked. They found Russell Wilson.
They did
the most
it at
important
an unusual
piece.
They have
rate, done all of these different things. They've taken risks with Jimmy. They took a risk with Percy. They've done all of these things. Like if they were to listen to this, they'd say, "Hold on a second, guys." Okay, over a decade in the track record that most don't have in the NFL because they run through and they cycle through coaches
but
Brock, and GMs.
Over the last few years, their hit rate has been normal. I'm not crushing John Schneider and saying he's been bad since the beginning. At the beginning, he hit at a crazy rate, right? I mean, he got blackjack every time. Eventually, you're going to draw 16 against the 10.
Yep.
And I think he just kind of came back to normal. Yeah, he hit on Tyler Lockett. He hit on Frank Clark. He's hit on DK Metcalf. We can come through some other names as well. I'm not a Jaron Reed. I think he's been a good pick. He's also had his misses in there. So they've sort of been hit or miss since.
Yes.
At the beginning, they had a ridiculous run of hitting on talent after talent after talent. That was incredible. And Will Disley's probably another hit. Like there are some hits that they've made.
And then you had top 15 picks in Earl and Okung.
But because this has been just normal, it's time to supplement that with something because you haven't had enough big time hits to make yourself truly great other than Russell Wilson. You just have kind of a normal amount of, like, everybody's got a couple of good players on their team, even bad teams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Cardinals have a couple of really good players, right? And you've got yours. You need a few more. And by the way, they don't need a ton more. If they have a few more, they're right there amongst the best teams in the NFC. They weren't that different from San Francisco this year. But they need more help on defense.
Well, listen,
and by the way,
Russell will tell you they need superstars.
And they've got a guy in Pete Carroll that can help attract them. And I do believe what Jake said, being at the Pro Bowl and seeing what a star Pete is amongst the players there. They gravitate to him. I was asking Jake yesterday, okay, how many other star coaches are there? He said maybe a handful, right? We said Harbaugh, Pete, Peyton, Belichick, Reed. Yeah, maybe. I mean, there's a couple other guys on the fringe of that. I mean, the guy's only been to the playoffs once. I mean, we'll see. But McVay maybe on the fringe of that. And
Shanahan.
Yeah, there's some guys who are maybe on the fringe who may become stars here, and they certainly are trending in the right direction. But in terms of guys who've shown it over, Tomlin was kind of on the edge of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a handful or so, maybe a half dozen guys that are that have some star power as a coach.
The
Pete's one of them.
That move the needle for other pros.
And we've seen it affect their success. I mean, why does Clowney come to Seattle but not to Miami? Pete's a big reason. It's not like the team was so unbelievably talented he had to be here. Like, Pete's a big part of that, right? Pete and Russ are stars. So who can it attract this year in free agency because they need the help? Who wants that? Who wants to come play for a star? Who, like Jadeveon Clowney, has felt like they haven't been treated like a man enough in their career, and it's time to come here and be treated appropriately?
And who wants to play for a quarterback that is one of the top three in the game, who, by the way, will go publicly saying, hey, man, this is what we need. We need more of you.
Does that affect those guys?
Free agency is very, very key to get superstars on your team.
Yeah. Does it affect that you've got this, you know, icon right now in the league, that you've got one of the five, you know, best players in the league, that you've gotten that quarterback? Yeah, I think that always plays.
Does that get Clowney to stay?
I think $22 million gets Clowney to stay. I think that's.
But if he's offered $22 million here and $22 million elsewhere, does he stay?
Yes, and Pete's a part of it. And treat me like a man.
What if Atlanta gives it to him and he could go back closer to home? I mean, does Pete have enough juice to overcome some of that home cooking?
That's a fair question.
Because it's going to be the case with Jaron Reed too. And I think sometimes these guys don't know what they don't know about what's out there.
And that's also I think for Clowney, he's on that level, and he said it at the end of the year in his post game interviews. I want to play for a contender, and I bet you David Clowney would say, you know what else we need on this roster? Some stars around me. You know what else we need? We need some people on the back end of the secondary to take the ball away.
You don't think he wants to be quadruple teamed?
I don't think so.
You don't think he thinks Ziggy Ansah was the star he needed on the other side?
He looks down the line and says, oh, great, Rasheem Green and Brandon Jackson are in. Awesome. This is now I'll only be double teamed and not chipped on my way through this double team. Yeah, I don't think he'd love that either.
No.
So I think Jadeveon would be right there with Russell, and I bet Bobby would to some degree too. Like, we need difference makers. We don't just need middle class. We don't need to just make something out of nothing. We need guys like Clowney that are uniquely gifted. You know, and I bet, honestly, part of why Russell said that was he was down at the Pro Bowl around the top, you know, upper class of talent. Mm. When you're around those guys, they just – I remember talking to one of the Indianapolis Colts coaches, Clyde Christensen, been in the league a long time. He's like, man, we went to the Pro Bowl last year. The year before, the Colts and Dungy was with the Buccaneers, and they coached in the Pro Bowl. He said, man, we went down there and to see Randy Moss, like, in person. Like, you can play against him, right? You can scout against him, but when you act against him and you see how different they are.
They run the drills that your players run all the time, and then you see how different it is when he runs it.
Wow. That is something else right there. And maybe that was good for these Seahawks and good for John and Pete. Not only to recruit and be around it, but to be reminded. And even it pushes a quarterback that has never said anything like that over 8 years publicly, right? That has never said, this is what we need on this roster. Maybe that was a really beneficial week as we look back on it. After all, a week of influence, of being influenced, of trying to influence, of all of it. And kind of refreshing to hear Russell come out of his shell a little bit and be able and willing to say that.
All right, so if you trade up, what kind of draft is this for that? Are there guys in the top of this draft that if you trade up for them, it's worth your time?
Yes. I would say there's probably maybe more freakish receivers.
Okay. Right? I don't need that.
I know. I don't know if there's a freakish lineman.
You're trading up like into the low teens, like 10 to maybe? 15.
Okay. Is there anybody who can get to the passer? Is there any pass rusher that is going to be worth your time to trade up for in the top 15
I'll
picks?
I'll play some Baldinger sound on this kid out of TCU.
I don't want to go back to that well.
You know, that is an unnecessary shot.
Sorry, LJ. That's messed up.
That is not right.
That was messed up.
Come on, have a heart.
I would.
The real shots on this podcast aren't coming until we start talking Mariners, because we got a couple people who are worthy of a shot or two.
Yeah, I would say right now, this is the early stages.
I'm just looking
draft,
at Daniel
right?
Jeremiah's group here.
This is the early stages. There's some creatures on the O-line. Okay. There's a ton of creatures at receiver. This conversation, that guy is just uniquely wired. Walk me through some of these.
You're not trading all the way up to Chase Young at number two, right?
There's no way you're getting him.
You just don't have enough to do that.
That's a generational talent.
All right, this is Daniel Jeremiah's list here. Number three is Jeff Okuda, the cornerback from Ohio State, right? You're not getting up that high either.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think anything in your top five is totally unrealistic.
Derek Brown has him at number set. You can't get there? Worth your time?
No, I wouldn't. For a D-tackle, that's... Okay. No, no.
Are you trading up for a safety like Isaiah Simmons? Safeties can change your whole game.
Well, he's a safety. He's a linebacker. He's an inside backer. He's an outside backer. He is a dynamic. These are the kind of guy. I'm glad you're referencing all these names. because these are the kind of guys we're talking about.
Okay.
These are the kind of guys that are just different than everybody else. These are the type of guys that even in a league of great athletes are the most elite athletes.
I don't want to go after this guy's name from LSU. He's an edge rusher from LSU.
Chaseon.
What's his name?
Chaseon.
Chaseon.
Yeah, he's freaky fast too.
Can
yeah.
he?
Rip right through that inside shoulder and you get to the damn quarterback.
So that's what LJ Collier can
do. So that, he has him at number 11, which means he's somewhere in that 10 to 15 range. Is that mm-hmm. worth your time? He's an edge rusher, young kid coming out of LSU.
Redshirt sophomore.
Is that worth your time?
So fast.
Whew. It is interesting, though. You go through this, and okay, here's another edge guy, AJ
Epinesa. Epinesa out of Iowa. He may fall in the low teens.
Before the season was a top three pick consensus.
I don't want some guy from Iowa.
He's a really good player.
Is he?
Yes.
What's he doing at Iowa? I guess Iowa's okay. No, I was thinking of Illinois. Illinois is where I don't want anybody.
Yeah, no.
I don't want anybody from Illinois.
You were just talking about like trading up in the first round when you said, I don't need a wide receiver, right?
Right.
Okay, because not in general.
I'm happy for you to get. So say, it's a deep
throwing wide, the ball to Malik Turner.
Malik
and David
Turner has
Moore.
To catch playoff yeah. passes.
It's a deep wide receiver class, and I'm not saying you shouldn't draft a wide receiver. But if you're trading up in the first round,
okay,
what you need is an edge rusher. Or such a shutdown corner that you know he is exactly
so,
what you want.
Okay, so lastly, let's wrap this thing up. Do you feel like, it, because this name popped into my head, with a program that's run very similarly, with a lot of really good people, with tremendous stability, and a guy in Thomas Dimitroff that I think John Schneider respects a lot,
mm-hmm.
who, like John, has been in his job a decade for a reason because he's really good at it, the Atlanta Falcons said, we got to go all in this offseason. Right, we got a quarterback. We've got a lot of pieces. This is the year for to pay off all of the last half hour of our conversation. And the Falcons said, we're going after Julio Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and they mortgaged their farm and a bunch of picks, and they went after it. Right, is that what you're looking for? Do you think the Seahawks have enough of a middle class? Do you think they've got enough of a depth that it is time for this team to say, we are a superstar away in the draft? We got $60 million in free agency. And we'll add one or two there.
Yeah, because of that, yes. If they didn't also have the $60 million, I think I would be a little bit more hesitant. But they've done what they need to do with their middle class and the depth. They have the quarterback who is in his prime, and they have $60 million in free agency to also handle some of their other
and
holes.
You got Carson,
yes,
Lockett,
and you got a ton of picks. Yes, I do. This is the time. But I don't know, Brock, is whether or not those guys I just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
what is this? How significant is the difference between Javon Kinlaw and one of the other names I just mentioned? Like
Ross Blacklock.
Significant difference between the guys who are going to be available at 27 and the guys who are going to be available at 13.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a big enough difference this year or
was
not?
Was there a significant difference in Earl Thomas at 13, 14? And Rashad Penny at 28.
Yes.
And I hate to
compare. But I'm asking with these guys in particular, is there a big enough difference?
Welcome to the
them?
Greatest crapshoot there is. It
oh,
is
you're supposed
the
to
NFL
know
draft.
These things. You're a you're like the number two Fox analyst.
Well, I'll tell you what
for
there
gosh
is.
Sakes.
I'll tell you what
What's
there
the
is.
Point of having the college football guy here if you can't tell me
tell you,
whether Ross Blacklock
yes.
is better than some guy like,
well, here's the difference.
You know,
AJ Epinesa.
Kalevon Chaseon.
Late first round, Epinesa, right?
Yes.
Is six,
Epinesa.
Whatever they're going to list him.
He's effervescent.
6'4", 260. He'll probably run 4.8 at the combine versus Chaseon, who's going to run 4.45 at the combine. So is there a significant difference between number 10 and number 27?
Sounds
yeah.
like there
between
is.
Earl and it, Thomas and Taylor Mays?
Yes, there usually is. And
all right.
It's usually
trade up and get
2/10 of a second and a 40, and it's usually a different physical special trait that they have. Yeah, and it's something that unfortunately where you've drafted in the late 20s gets harder and harder to find.
Yeah. It'll be a moment where people, I think, Brock, always know exactly where they were when they first heard it, and that is the passing of Kobe Bryant. And I think, like most things, it's one of those, when you first hear, especially because it came from TMZ, there's a moment of disbelief and denial, like, yeah, we'll wait and see whether or not that's real. And yep. then it wasn't too much longer after that that it was confirmed, and we found out that the world had lost at age 41, one of its legendary sports figures and a guy who did a whole lot more beyond the court.
You're what now, 40?
41. Kobe was born 4 months after me.
Kyle, 30?
Rock.
Are you 30 yet?
32.
Huh?
Two.
32. Howdy?
32.
Happy birthday last Thursday, thank too, you. Howdy.
Brock, you're 49 this year? Is that right?
I'll
late
be 40s? 44 in April.
Tax day.
43. Yep, tax day. I'll be 44. We, in our lifetimes, I believe, have not experienced anything like this. Right? Roberto Clemente was before us. John F. Kennedy was before us. I think in our...
JFK Jr. was sort of similar.
Somewhat. Princess Diana was... I think we were really young. I don't mm-hmm. know if the young
yeah,
youngsters...
I was four.
Yeah. yeah. So I remember
we
Princess Diana.
We were in college when Princess Diana died. Weren't
okay.
we?
No.
Yeah, it was in the 90s.
Yeah.
You're You may have were in high school.
I think I was in college.
I was in high school.
I think it was like 96, 97.
Was it that late?
I think so.
I don't think
Candle
so.
Candle in the Wind. Elton Anyways. John, one of my favorite songs that he made for her. Anywho, we have seen a few, but nothing quite to this magnitude.
1997, just to end that.
Thank you. 97. All right. So I was in college. It's a good year. stop it. It's very serious. We have not seen this. We had not experienced it. The Grazes, listen to those guys talk about it and talk about Clemente and talk about JFK in particular. We have not experienced something of this magnitude that just stops you. And for us, we were on vacation in Mexico, Molly and I, and it was actually at the pool. And Haley texted first to Macy and like, did you see the news that Kobe died? I was like, what? How is that even possible? And then you start to go through it. And I don't know how, and everyone reacts to it differently. Right. For me, I just go into fact-finding mode. What in the heck happened? How did this possibly happen? And then the minute you heard and it was confirmed his daughter was on that plane, just sunk. Done. Just done. And for my wife, especially, to watch Molly in this situation, really, it was not that we were huge Kobe fans. Right. In some ways, some of his this complicated because off the court, there were some things that were absolutely devastating and not a fan at all. And it wasn't as if we were important to us by any means. Jordan was Jordan, and Kobe was a really nice player and super competitive and won a bunch of titles and awesome. But he just didn't have that bond. But I'll tell you, once his daughter and you heard the players on the team, it was the last 2 days of our trip. And Molly's like, I can't get over this. I am hurting so bad for those families involved. And when you play in the travel basketball deal and you see that and you see some of the influence that Kobe was having – and I think for me in the years ahead and the decades ahead, as I've got young girls, and Mike, you came and watched Macy play some basketball. When you've got girls just directly involved in that world, it does hit you. It does hit home that much harder. When you have made all these trips with teams and you know the bond that those families create and you know that he invested all this money to grow the game and you know he flew to Kashmir and you know the relationship he has with Sabrina Ionescu at Oregon and you know how much women's basketball was going to mean to him and the absolute fire starter he was going to be an igniter for that sport and was already becoming to see that absolutely squelched and pass with him and with his daughter was heartbreaking. Mm. That's the part of it that we'll land on and why I don't think we'll ever forget on my wife's birthday. It was her birthday. I don't think we will ever forget her 43rd birthday because of it. Because he was going to really carry that torch for women's basketball in a way that nobody, no star before him ever came close to touching. And that's the part that's hard.
Yeah.
That's the part that I think hit home the most. And I'll be curious. Steph Curry, you know, has got young daughters. Steph Curry makes now a women's basketball shoe. Steph Curry may carry some of that forward, but Kobe was coaching. He was integrated. He was loving it. Mm-hmm. He was empowering. He was inspiring. He was growing that women's game to places that just, yeah, that
Kobe's hard. Complicated.
Very.
And I think if there's any objection I've had over the last couple of days is just that I feel like in some ways people have tried to simplify Kobe. I don't think it's fair to do that. He's a complicated figure, and I think what he means is very different to a lot of different people, yep. Some by age, some by gender, some by life experience. Kobe means a lot of, and some by location. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, to Laker fans, he means something different than he does to kind of the rest of the population. But you know, like I feel old saying this. I'd never heard the whole yelling Kobe thing. That's a thing, Kyle? You yell Kobe?
Kobe!
I've never heard that.
You
I've never
did?
Seen anyone do that or heard
Why
didn't anyone
you ever
do that?
Do that when
oh, yeah, you're throwing like your dirty white tea into the laundry hamper? Kobe!
Have you ever heard that, bro?
I never heard you say that, Kyle, all these years.
Have you heard anyone
trash?
Say that?
No.
I've never heard
I
of that.
I've never heard anybody
and people
that.
Volume shooting.
We are old, I guess, in our 40s. I mean, we're Kobe's age, but like, I've never heard anybody do that or heard that that was a thing. But obviously that was that. I've now seen the video of Justin Thomas doing it on the golf course. And I mean, it obviously was a big thing. His skill, his competitiveness, his perseverance. I know Jay Williams told the story. Have you heard the Jay Williams story? Mm-hmm. He had told me that a couple of years ago. I was hosting a show with him of just Kobe refusing to leave the gym.
Yep.
He's like, yeah, he's not leaving. So yep. Jay Williams is like, I was there forever. Kobe had beaten me there. And I just I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to leave before him. But at some point, like, he's never going to leave as long as I'm here. So I just have to go because it's the only way Kobe will go. I mean, that level of competitiveness and all that. And, you know, in the last few years, he does seem to have become, as you said, a great supporter of women's hoops and a fantastic father and an investor and a community leader. And,
yep.
You know, we talked about on the night he spoke before the ESPYs with LeBron and Dwayne Wade and others, and Chris Paul, I believe. And that was a really powerful. I mean, he's so eloquent, and he's, you know, he knows all these languages. And I mean, he's a really interesting human being. And yes, you're right. I also don't think it's fair to eliminate from history that he was credibly accused of rape that was settled out of court. That that has been, it seems, whitewashed this week, and I don't think that's fair. And this is not Shama Sawant yelling, you know, horrible things about Paul Allen on the day he dies. His legacy does have some level of complication to it, and to completely ignore that, which I have seen quite a bit of, I think is unfair to accusers and survivors and people who have suffered. Now, it's again complicated because it seems like Kobe learned from that and has changed as a human being. And maybe that is part of the reason, Brock, he's embraced women's basketball and become such a family man. Maybe he really truly learned from that. I don't know him personally. I certainly would like
to think
so.
Evidence would certainly show that over the last couple decades.
That's right. But at the same time, I don't want to sit here as big supporters of Coaching Boys Into Men and Team Up Washington and LifeWire, which I'm on their board, and pretend like this wasn't part of Kobe's legacy. It is. Doesn't mean it needs to be the entirety of the conversation, but I do think that it's not fair to people to not mention it.
Don't you think in time that aspect will come around a little bit?
Now it's been a few days, and it's got to be. It's a complex story. I think the problem is when it's brought up, people seem to get really angry and resent whoever it is that's bringing it up, and it just makes me ask: are we not capable of having nuanced conversations in our world?
No,
we can't do it.
Nope,
we just have to give up. That's a dangerous precedent to set, and I'm not sure I'm willing to accept that. I'm not willing to accept that we cannot have
Salk on that shelf. Salk won't be put on that shelf. You won't ever be shut out and shut down of those conversations.
I love choosing sides. I created a game called Which Is Better that's all about instantly choosing sides and rooting for one
over
the other.
You also created a game called Pun It or Kick It.
That's true.
A little more nuanced.
Game called Am I Old?
It was called Kick It or Pun It. I'm a good game creator. I'm like the Dr. James Naismith.
And the answer was yes.
Modern day radio. But on important things, the world needs to be complicated. We can't just choose sides and not accept nuance and complication.
Yep.
Because the world can't work. It can't function that way.
Correct. And you can't be afraid to say what you believe because, oh gosh, I can't say that. I would like to be able to say that. I'd like to say this is complicated, but then all of a sudden, hold on a second. Why is it complicated? The man lost his life. Why are you dragging that out of his past?
Right. Well, because it's part of his story.
It is part of his story.
Absolutely. And it's certainly part of her story, the victim's story. And there's so many other victims in the world that, you know, when they see it get erased from history, that's not fair to them and their future. So let me ask both of you guys, because this isn't just about Kobe.
Both of you guys. You
and Howdy.
Three of us here.
Well, but you and Howdy both specifically said that, no, we can no longer have nuanced conversations. Mm. Why do you think that is? What's keeping us from our ability to do that? Because there was a time in history when that was a big part of the world. What is it that you think is keeping us from that?
I think we like heroes and villains, and we are being fed more of those over time than we ever have before, and we have access to those storylines more than we ever have before. So that's the prism that most people
even,
want to look at.
And yet, even the movies that I know you guys love, the Marvel movies and that stuff, even those, for the most part, the heroes and villains are complicated. There are anti-heroes, and they have elements of good and bad in them, and they're on the spectrum of good versus evil. It is rare to see a movie where the good person is totally good 100% and the evil person is so thoroughly evil. I mean, that's not the norm. The movies that dictate a lot of that don't show that.
Yes, it's the idea that you pick a side and that you're always on that side from the time that movie begins to the time
it ends. So it's tribalism.
Yes.
It's just tribalism.
Yeah. It's a divisiveness that we have right now, unfortunately, in our culture, that you're on this side or you're on that side. And you know what? You're going to get painted that way. And you better be careful whatever comes out of your mouth next, because that could be used and you could become a huge viral story and your reputation can change in one sentence.
ADD a part of it, just a lack of time to spend researching and thinking about nuance.
Probably.
We just have to instantly, I don't have time to really think much about this. So the moment I hear something, I just choose a side one way or another.
I think all that comes into play.
You know, I'm sure that you could go a lot longer on this as well and go through this, but it really worries me. And I don't think I'm alone that if you can't have complicated, nuanced conversations about people and about issues, we're destined to not succeed as a society. That's a major problem. The world is complex. People are incredibly complicated. I learn that every day in the management part of my job. People are as complicated.
I learned that every day talking to a guy for 10 years. It was intense.
I bet it was.
It was complicated.
But it is interesting how much we try to and I can't tell you how many people I've talked to, you know, who said, well, my feelings about Kobe aren't exactly what I'm hearing on the air, but I don't want to say any of that publicly because I don't want to get attacked for what I think about Kobe.
Right.
I think there are some real conversations to be brought up. I think helicopters are dangerous, and I don't get into helicopters. I'm not blaming him for his death. Let me be very clear. But getting into a helicopter over and over again is a dangerous proposition, and taking your 13-year-old in that same helicopter, I feel for him, I feel for his daughter, I feel for their family, and you know, we've kind of talked through that moment when you realize that thing is going down and he's up there. It is impossible to imagine being there with your daughter, and I have two of them, you have two of them, and a son. I mean, it's impossible to imagine. I also don't put my I don't take helicopters with my daughters. So I don't know how to like work through all of that without sounding cold-hearted, without sounding like I'm blaming a victim of a helicopter crash, which he is. He's a victim. Mm-hmm. It's also a dangerous situation to be in. So how do you have a nuanced, real, complicated conversation about that without immediately causing half of the world to say you're a horrible human being for even asking?
Correct.
How do you learn from anything if you can't ask questions about it? Mm-hmm. Is there anything to be learned from this? I would hope so.
That's why we have a podcast, BroncosTalkPodcast.com, for nuanced and difficult and divisive conversations.
We'll be having a much more divisive one later, I think. Actually, let's do it here now. This stuff just makes me mad. Last week, the Mariners did their pre-spring training stuff. They had their big lunch.
Believe big, right?
Huh?
The believe big?
They did not go believe big.
Did not go
year.
Believe
no,
big.
No, because Jack's already had his foot over that. No, they didn't believe big. They did everything you would want them to do. Jerry, you know, went in front of the media and said, yeah, it's going to be a challenging year, of course. We got a lot of youth. We're excited about the future. We did take a step back to take a step forward. This is what a rebuild looks like. And I, as far as I'm concerned, has been as transparent with the media as anybody's ever been. I mean, especially you go back to Jack, who was always circumspect about everything. I mean, Jerry tells you exactly what they're going to do, and then they go out and do it. And I think Scott is very much the same way. And to hear a couple of takes on the Mariners this weekend just drives me crazy.
Oh, boy.
You want to start with the newspaper or the television?
I don't know. I don't know.
Newspaper.
Okay,
paper of record.
Here's the problem now with the paper of record. I read this, and I'm first of all, I'm impressed with Matt Calkins. I legitimately thought once our show went off the air and became just a podcast, he wouldn't be able to write columns anymore. But apparently he can still write them even without us giving him the ideas. So Matt, to you, I am impressed, because for years it seems like you just borrowed whatever we were talking about, threw a different headline on it, and then threw your name on it. It's not quite plagiarism, but it's certainly plagiarism adjacent. Anyway, without us to help guide you through your ideas, you came up with this genius one, which is, let me read the headline here. With Felix Hernandez gone, the 2020 Mariners lack star power and just about any appeal for fans. Now, I don't pretend to think that he should work for the Mariners or anything like that. He is a columnist and he has to have his independence.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations for coming up with the idea that the Mariners don't have star power without Felix this year. You've nailed it. That is going deep. Wow. That is thought-provoking. You're going to have people talking about this all up and down the Pacific Northwest and the I-5 corridor. That's incredible. Oh, the Mariners don't have star power this year? We can't curse on the podcast, but Sherlock should be at the end of the sentence. No kidding, man. The Mariners don't have star power. Yeah, that's the point. They're actually rebuilding, Brock.
You want to try to write a column about the Mariners coming off that media day? Good luck.
I guess,
what else are you going to write? Like, if you're in his position as a columnist, what opinion are you going to have
about
these Mariners?
I mean,
insightful, not a podcast, not a baseball, you know, heavy. You're a columnist trying to reach the masses. I think he's basically saying, buckle up. You've been used to bobbleheads. You've been used
he's
to Felix's.
Not, he's not saying buckle up, though. And like, the first part is fine. They lack star power, but here's what you are looking at. Fine, I understand that. But they have no appeal. Here, let me read the beginning of it. A few months ago, you thought running a marathon was going to be a good idea. These things tend to happen from the comfort of your couch when you aren't feeling any pain. But then suddenly you're 16 miles into the thing, feel like you want to die, and realize there's still 10 miles of hell to go. Mm-hmm. And that's when you can approximate life as a present-day Mariners fan or somebody reading this column. Here's the point. When you're 16 miles into the thing, it is hard.
And you got bloody nipples.
It is challenging.
Chafing.
That is when it's at its most dire point. But the point is that if you can get through the next few miles and get to 26,
mm-hmm.
you accomplish something that is worth the process.
If you bail at mile 10, you just wasted 10 right. miles of your life not finish another marathon.
It is such a messed up way of viewing the marathon. What he's sort of saying is the Mariners have run 16 of the 26 miles, and rather than running the last 10, they should make sure they're comfortable now.
Mm.
Go to the hospitality suite. Go hang out for a while. Those are the equivalent of adding some stars before you're ready. He's literally advocating the exact approach that the Mariners have been rightfully criticized for years, mm-hmm. which is trying to placate the fans by trying to bring in a star or two even when they can't help them win.
Yep.
This is grade-A hackery. This is just trying to make a cheap buck over at Jerry DePoto and the Mariners' expense. And it's a waste of everybody's time and energy, so I should stop talking
about
it.
You're getting really red.
I don't...
He did his job.
It was ridiculous.
He moved your emotional
meter.
That
is a truly ridiculous article to write.
It is.
Like, the idea that you want the Mariners... You know what I would like to do? I'd like to take a 60-win team, and I'd like to add 3 5-win players, so they could be a 75-win
team. Is that what he was?
That's what
is
I
that what he was
because
suggesting?
Then the fan, a few
Hold
more fans would show.
Is that
up.
What he was suggesting? He was saying that they need star
this
power.
This team makes public money, and instead of trying to be in the World Series someday, they should try to miss the playoffs as many times as they possibly can. You want to write this article 5 years ago? We're in the midst of running out terrible teams and trying to convince us that they aren't. Fine, but you want to write it now when they're doing exactly they're at the bottom and they finally have rid right. themselves of the things that hold them back? Mm. That's ridiculous.
And then you use the body of the column to just sort of take cheap shots at guys on the team. Tom Murphy was a damn fine catcher last season, but if you put him next to a random mechanic in Ballard and ask strangers which one's a Mariner, you'd probably get a 50-50 split. Thanks.
So what?
Well, like, what's the point of that? You're just taking a random cheap shot at Tom Murphy, who, by the way, would mess you up, just for the record. That dude's...
Dude's wearing some serious cowboy boots when I saw him last week.
Seriously. Like, of all the guys to take a cheap shot at, I don't think he would be the first name on my list.
What'd you do this offseason? Oh, it's turkey hunting.
Right.
Oh, yes, sir.
With my bare hands.
I just...
Bring
yeah,
his neck.
Let's bring back the good old days, like last year when Felix Hernandez was here.
Okay,
That's the right message to send to Mariners
earlier.
Fans.
That's one. What
well,
now?
And the
what,
other,
what now?
The other is a friend, and it always gets hard with the Aaron Levine ones, because I like Aaron personally, but for the life of me, I don't understand the world in which he inhabits. The same world in which we get accused of being paid off by Oakview Group, even when we're right about things like, you know, them being the ones to build an arena. The one where we get accused of not knowing what we're talking about when it comes to the Huskies, even though we were right there on top of the idea of Romar getting fired and then bringing
Peterson
in somebody
retiring
else.
Early.
I mean, like, all...
That the Seahawks don't have any internal turmoil at all, and that Richard Sherman is fine, and he's the leader of this team, and he never needs to move on.
And that there's no way Matt Flynn is going to end up not being the starter because Russell will. I mean, it's like thing after thing that we get attacked for and accused of and said that we're bought and paid for by other people when we just end up being right when it's all said and done and everybody forgets about what led up to it. So when I read his tweet this week and he says, in the effort to acquire more young players and to create flexibility in our roster, we're also paying about $40 million for former players to play at other locations. That is an actual quote from Mariners GM Jerry DePoto today. The plan might work, but that's just nuts. I don't think it's nuts. It's literally trying to get away from a plan that hasn't been working and get to the new plan. It takes a while in mm-hmm. baseball. His other one says, it's got a video of DePoto and says, this is why fans often get frustrated with the lip service they receive. What? Hasn't Jerry DePoto specifically not given lip service?
Well,
isn't he specifically not trying to make everybody comfortable at mile 16 and saying you're going to be in it for the long haul here, that you're a couple of years away and that we like what we're doing and that they have five of the top 100 guys on Baseball America and that I think they're going to end up doing better on MLB Pipeline, that they've rebuilt the entirety of their farm system, that while they don't have farms at the major league or stars at the major league level, they're banking on Kelnick and Rodriguez and some of the pitcher, Logan Gilbert. And maybe the Nuelvi Marti. Like,
and $100 million in cap space next year and the year after and the year after that.
Like, what am I missing here? How is this that complicated? No. And my real feeling is that neither Aaron Levine nor Matt Calkins are dumb. They're not dumb people. I've met both of them. Aaron I know better than Matt, and he's a very smart guy. He's just being cheap. These are cheap shots.
Yeah.
These are cheap, lazy shots in order to attract a short-term audience by picking on somebody that's doing the right thing, even when it requires doing something that hurts in the meantime. And I'm not saying it's his job to stick up for them. It's not. He's not paid for, but he's not a partner. There's no reason for either of them to have to stand up for the Mariners. But to take cheap shots at their expense when they're actually trying to serve their fans long-term and their fans' interest, it doesn't make sense. And this is the same garbage as, oh, are they going to charge minor league prices as long as they're losing? Like, what? Who has that kind of expectation? They're cheap shots, and they're not worthy of people of that stature.
Unfortunately, they are cheap shots that are born out of two decades of struggle.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are.
That's not entirely true.
Yes, they are.
They're picking on they're ascribing that struggle to people who didn't have one thing to do with it.
Those are two decades of struggle. For a franchise that was really good, and that is where the history of this comes from. That is where these shots come from, because that is who they hear from. That's their constituency that they broadcast to. That is a lot of what they will hear constantly. And it is, and Mike, it's what we heard on the radio. It's why at times it's really hard to take Mariner folks' calls. You're just tired of it. Just tired of hearing about all that past and all that past and all that past and all these years, and it's just a foregone conclusion. And you get frustrated with some of my friends, smart guys, that they're just like, I'm done, I'm out. Until they win and prove me otherwise, I will not listen to them.
That's fine.
It's misplaced anger, is what you're saying.
Yes.
It is pent-up anger that they didn't allow themselves to let out when they should have, because they were fed a line and they now don't agree with it.
Then this goes back to the same conversation we had a few minutes ago in the Kobe thing. This is utterly lacking in nuance. This is cheap shot. This is kicking somebody when they're down for no good reason, even though they have a pretty good plan to get out.
But he's going
to
say,
"Look, if the Mariners were bad and floundering and didn't have a plan,
the Orioles
take all the shots you want. The Orioles don't have a clue what they're doing. Take a shot. That's fair. Bad organizations with bad leadership and no plan and no direction deserve a shot. But this is taking shots at Pete Carroll in 2009 and 10 before he had everything in place and he was rotating through the bottom of his roster. Oh, Pete Carroll didn't have a plan. He didn't know what he's doing. Yes, he did. He had a pretty good plan. It wasn't completed yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what bugs me is that both of these guys are smart enough to see that.
But to
they
Aaron's
just don't
point,
want to, because they can score some cheap points in the meantime.
But Aaron would say, hold on a second. This isn't my lip service. This isn't me taking shots. He played the video and intercut the two, right? This was Jerry a year ago saying,
we don't think that we're likely to threaten for a playoff position this year. Our season, we will measure our season based on the development of our young players.
That was
this year.
That was this year.
Right.
And then the year before, it was, well, by 2020, we should be competing.
Well, it was 2020 or 2021.
Yes.
And they're not going to compete this year.
Yes. So I think that's what Aaron is saying.
You think that's lip service?
No, that's Aaron. I think that's Aaron literally saying these are out of his lips. This isn't
right.
me.
He
this
put 20 out there, and right. here we are in 20, and we are not close to what he said.
Right.
That's what he's cherry picking off the very top and
yep.
surface of the argument.
Yep.
So in that sense, there is some credence there, because there is a little bit of twinge of,
and that is,
you know,
why
what?
Every time, Mike, and then I'll just full transparency, every time that we had heard over the years from people there and folks maybe even at the very top that would say, hey, we're going to compete for World Series in 21, you cringe. Like, just don't put that. That's why Jack Zarenza cringed when Believe Big was up there. Don't put that up there, man.
I never took it, though, as by 2020 or 21, they were going to be done with this process. It was just that's when things will start to turn.
Yes.
And I
that
think
was
things,
when we would start to see
that's right.
the future.
And I think you are going to see that this year. Again, if you don't want to, if you just want to crush the Mariners, you can absolutely twist words into doing so.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if what he's saying is, hey, in 2019 was the heading down still. Mm-hmm. 2020 should be the beginning of the ascent back up. It may not translate into games won this year, but you should, by middle of this year and into the end of this year, hope to start to see some of those guys. I think we're going to see Logan Gilbert early. We're going to see Kelnick this year. We may see Julio Rodriguez this year, for God's sakes. Like, we're going to actually have an opportunity to start to see them. Do we expect that they're going to compete for a World Series right off the bat? No, I think that's unrealistic in the way baseball is played and the way you develop. But is it possible for them to start that process this year? Yeah. I think we are going to start to see that. So I don't see that as lip service. I see that as a lot of honesty and transparency on Jerry DePoto's part and on the Mariners' part in general. And to take cheap shots at them, I don't see the value in it.
Well, I love the passion.
All right, well, after an angry segment and a sad segment, poignant segment, we are on to hopefully something a little bit happier. Brock, some good news, bad news, no news.
Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
Tyreek Hill made fun of his quarterback.
You hear this?
I think this is Kermit T. Frog.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had some fun with Mahomes over the years, and this was at media night, primetime media night, and this was his wide receiver. You got to be careful, man. The guy's throwing you the rock. Here he is doing his best Mahomes.
When he comes in the huddle and he sounds like a frog, that's probably my favorite moment. I crack up every time, just like it's the first time. You want to hear it?
Do it right.
Yeah, Kermit the Frog sounds just like that. I can't do that no more because he ain't going to throw me the ball no more.
It's pretty good.
I love this team and just how we fight.
I got to go bad news, though. I can't
get
into
Tyreek
Hill.
Every phase of the ball, special teams, defense, and offense, that everybody can step up and everybody can make plays.
Did you see his player introduction in the AFC Championship game, Tyreek Hill?
No.
You didn't see what he did?
Patrick Mahomes, Texas Tech.
You didn't see Tyreek Hill run out of the tunnel, get on all fours, and lift his leg to mark his territory?
Oh,
what?
No.
You didn't see that?
No, he
didn't. I thought that was going to be...
He did the Ole Miss.
I thought that was going to be a big-time...
He did the Ole Miss move.
Yes, he came out and he kind of, marked his territory.
I thought you didn't
watch the AFC and NFC Championship. How did you know?
I watched the beginning.
Before I fell asleep. CBS pregame.
This guy fell asleep, unfortunately.
I must say good news, and that dude has a chance, if he wins this Super Bowl, Mahomes, to be the face of the NFL. Been listening to Cowherd all week talk about it. Right? Who's going to be the next face of the NFL?
That's fine. Just as long as he's not the voice of the NFL.
Just Tom Brady's moving up. But wouldn't that be kind of cool? Listen to Mahomes.
No,
not to Tyree. Listen to Mahomes. This is going to be the voice and the face of the
NFL. You just got to get the ball in their hands somehow.
Yeah, boy.
He sounds a little bit like somebody else. Play me some more. There's somebody else that sort of sounds like that.
I don't have a ton of sound from him, but I've got some drop.
I love this team and just how we fight.
There's a coach that sounds like that. I got to figure out who it is.
But LSU coach?
No.
Is it Coach Ed Orgeron?
It's not him. It's somebody other than Ed Orgeron. Give me one more, Patrick Mahomes. See if I can figure out who it is. Because there's definitely...
Every phase of the ball, special teams, defense, and offense, that everybody can step up and everybody can make plays.
Gosh, he's just got a cool mix, man.
Sean McVay.
He's got a little Sean McVay to him, a little California cool guy.
It's a little bit of Sean McVay.
He's talking to Coach Shanahan, working out a couple plays.
Mahomes got a really cool mix of charisma and just edge.
He's got to get away from Aaron Rodgers, though, in those State Farm commercials.
I don't know. Those are pretty good.
Mahomey?
I know, but Aaron Rodgers is dragging down his Q rating, I think.
Yeah, that's probably.
I think it's dragging down the likability.
All right, next.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Husky men's basketball team has lost 7 of their last 9 games.
What is the deal, Brock?
And Jaden McDaniels benched.
Yeah. What happened? How are all these guys? What happened? This team's supposed to be good. What happened?
Such a bummer. And I don't think this is Quad A Green. People can point to Quad A Green and say, yeah, this is what happens. You lose your point guard. Everything falls apart.
That's
you lose
part
your quarterback.
Of it, though, right?
That's a little part of it. But when you
seems
flunk
like a
out,
pretty big part of it.
But when you flunk out of school,
right,
and you have to get a D and you can't get a D, that's a problem.
Well, I know that, but still, nobody cares.
This
about
is bad. Let's just say,
who
is
cares
bad.
About Quad A Green's grades?
Bad.
The only reason I know who he is because he plays for the basketball.
This is
team.
Bad news, and this is with one just grown man freshman. I mean, this is with one kid, absolutely, and Isaiah Stewart, absolutely living up to everything and more. And the other one, unfortunately, just falling apart.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just.
So is this on Hop?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just as all the praise in the world was on Hop last year for bringing that team together for that senior class and that group that made it all work. Absolutely. You gave him all the credit. he's got to take the lion's share of this blame. He got those kids from sophomores to juniors, seniors to buy in. He got those guys to run the stairs. He got those guys to get tougher, right? To play tougher together. And he deserved all of that credit for their run into the tournament a season ago.
It is so hard. Some of this is Hop's fault. Some is, I think, just the way circumstances are. It is hard when you're not sure whether or not you want to be a team that gets the one and dones or the team that wants to develop people over the course of 4 years.
Yes.
And the one and dones work for the right coaches at the right programs. And I think if you want to play that game, you've got to be at one of those programs. A program that doesn't let Quade Green fail. You got to be at Louisville. Guess what? If he's at Louisville, Quade Green's still playing. I'll guarantee you.
They're going to cheat their way to do it.
He is still playing. Somebody has taken that test for him at, I say Louisville. It could be anywhere. I mean, well, specifically.
He did leave. What happened to Kentucky?
Yeah. Who really knows? I mean, what they actually said was that he just wanted a new change of scenery and that he wasn't... Yeah.
He didn't want to go to comfortable.
But that's the point. Is like at the biggest schools, at the right coaches and the blue-blooded programs, they can afford to handle that because that's what their whole school
is
about.
That's not what Brock is.
I just thought this was going to get us a Brock betwixt in between. That Hopkins is betwixt in between.
He is a little bit.
What kind of program are they going
to be? I don't see that to be the case, though. I mean, Mike Hopkins, we gave him credit over the first 2 years of his time here for developing players and getting Matisse Thybulle to take the next step and getting Naz Carter to take the next step. Here we are with guys he's had and he's recruited. He's a year three with his guys. Mm-hmm. He ran a 6-man rotation for the first 10 games of the season.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
Yes.
You've got a full roster and you have nobody you recruited for next year. You've got no players coming into next year's flex. None. These are the guys that you thought you were going to win with. And you had this whole thing hinged on a guy who, in Jaden McDaniels, he just can't mentally carry that team.
I mean, look at the other two times. Right when we said this about Lorenzo over his run, what are you supposed to do? Not recruit Spencer Hawes? He's a 7-footer. He's going to the NBA. What are you supposed to do on Tony Roten, a 5-star? He's they're in your backyard. You have to get them. They're your guys. They're your local guys. That's the lifeblood of your program. Are you not supposed to recruit your 5-star, 1-and-done, top 10
player? It's why it is so hard to go from good to great, I think, in college basketball, maybe in all college sports, but especially college basketball. The great blue-blooded programs can afford to miss on McDaniels because they've got three other guys who are ready to take that spot. The programs that are built on guys being there for 3 or 4 years get their kind of guys, and they develop them over the course of time. And everybody else is trying to play one of those two games, but not committed enough to it. And if you are trying to play the one-and-done game and the McDonald's All-America game, but you don't have enough of them year in, year out to constantly deal with the misses, you're in trouble.
Yeah,
I think it's a bad situation to be in.
But I'll tell you, unlike college football, where it's the blue bloods and nobody else, go look at the top 10 in the net rankings. I took a little peek at that this morning. You realize that Dayton, Gonzaga, San Diego State, and Butler are in the top 10?
Yeah.
I mean, they know
who they are. That's my point.
Yes.
They're not trying to play the one and done game.
Nope.
They know who they are. They know what they're getting, and they develop those guys. And because of it, they can compete with the Kentuckys and UNCs and Dukes.
And let's also remember, Mike Hopkins is not a 20-year head coach. Right, he was an assistant for 20-some years in an incredible place. He came in and inherited, in some ways, I think, a really ideal situation in Matisse Thybulle that was a gem, that was a diamond in the rough, that was a first-round NBA pick that could be his cornerstone guy, to be the most unselfish, just great leader and on his tails, be the mouthpiece for everything you wanted to do. Well, this is a new situation for him. These are uncharted waters that he is in as that head guy, and I sure hope they're learning some valuable lessons.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Mitch Haniger suffered another injury related to his ruptured testicle. Will we now be out 6 to 8 weeks and may miss the start of the season?
Well, I mean, for the...
It's bad news, Mike.
There's no way to not call this bad news. It has to be bad news. I don't think it's necessarily bad news for the Mariners season, but for Haniger, I mean, what a mess this
is. See, Michael Saunders, like that is just doomed. Those two guys, right? Just every single imaginable injury. Like, come on, that's just dumb luck. That's just dumb luck. That's a sprinkler hit.
This is now three injuries related to the same injury.
But this all seems to be each one is from trying to come back too early. Like, hey, dude, you got to not. I mean, you know how intense. Remember our interview with him last year?
Awkward.
Do you remember how intense he was?
Very intense.
Brock.
Uncomfortable.
Brock.
So intense.
Do you remember how intense he was?
Yes, Michael, I was there.
Okay. Stop calling me Michael.
I do remember.
You
that.
Remember how intense he was?
Yes.
I thought he was going to hurt us.
Right.
I mean, he was like, he was staring daggers, man.
He was.
And it wasn't us. He was just like in the zone.
Yeah.
Well, that same, you know, all those great qualities, unfortunately, when it comes to rehabbing this kind of injury, probably work against you, right?
Bad news.
No other way to say it.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Salks and Hewards gathered together on Capitol Hill to watch Macy Heward play a basketball.
That was good news, man. That was so much fun. I was thinking about that actually when we were on vacation and talking about a little bit Molly and seeing your girls and Heather and Molly. Josh, you think Salk and I connect like in a unique way?
Heather and Molly.
No. I mean, they just talk and connect. Cecily and I was timing her like I used to do and like my dad used to do to me
you and
in
Cecily,
the gym.
That checks out. Like yes. You want to push someone. Cecily needs someone to push.
You could tell. She was watching. She was bouncing. She like wanted to be into it. Mm. So at halftime, I said, okay, Cess, go touch the wall and back. I'll time you.
Bronch running drills with her.
Yeah. And she hopped on down there, ran to the wall,
5 years old.
Back. And how fast? 8 seconds? I think you can do it in seven. Did it again.
She also tried to run like at halftime, sort of around the court and back through the middle. And somebody rolled the ball right at her. I thought she was going down. Yeah, it was like the boulder scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Cecily's out running.
That thing was going to take her out.
Yep.
She just barely, like a bowling ball, was able to get away from that thing. I had like a full slate of takeaways from watching Macy. Play hoops.
Tidbits or takeaways?
Well, I don't think at her height you can call them tidbits. She is a force, man. It was really fun to watch her. I've always been an unabashed Macy fan, but she's a stone cold killer.
She's hammer intense.
She's got some ability. Like she gets really mad when she misses or gives the ball up or something. Like she gets up. It's like,
never
oh man,
again.
The only person I've ever seen make that face is Brock, and now Macy's making it. And like a lot of people will let that stuff take them out of the game, but all it does is make her concentrate harder. So she's got no conscience. She will shoot over and over. She doesn't care, which is great. And she gets mad at herself and pushes herself even harder. I think she scored like 35 of the team's 45 points. It was great. And
they're
it seemed like she was playing with her friends too, which is kind of fun to see also.
Just aggressive. Right? And just an aggressive group of girls. That's what's been so fun to watch that team grow. Now, I will say this.
They also don't seem like afraid to shoot, even though Macy's like, I was worried based on your descriptions of Macy that it was going to be like, okay, point guard shoots and misses, and Macy's giving her the dagger.
Oh, give me that rock.
Yeah, she doesn't do that. That's what I was afraid of the like, I'm the star. Give me the ball. She didn't do that.
Like her dad would do?
Exactly.
No, she doesn't have that.
She's got at least enough of her mom in her so that that doesn't happen.
How about one last takeaway, by the way, that jumped out to you that Salk said like 8 different times, I can't believe this. I can't believe this. I knew this would be good for me to come to a
crazy.
Game.
Hold on.
I can't believe this.
This is shocking. So we talked about our ages earlier, right? So I'm 41, 42 in April.
Right.
Brock's 47, going to be 43 in April. Sorry.
Back nine club.
Okay, so we're getting old. But we both played high school basketball, right? We both played on high school basketball teams in the 90s. And that was just as, like, you know, the Michigan had done its thing, Fab Five, the shorts had gotten bigger and baggier.
Oh, yeah.
And there were still a few programs that had leftover uniforms from back in the day. Like our JV still had the huggers that came just past just past the underwear line.
Yeah, yep.
And we have to occasionally, like usually I've told you about the armory where we used to like be off campus playing games. Occasionally we'd have to do it in the big gym, like before the varsity game. Mm. That was awful.
It's a shame that you weren't like, all right, we'll get the big stage.
You couldn't because you were wearing shorts that were so small. You looked ridiculous.
So embarrassed.
It was so embarrassing. And so finally, thankfully, I made varsity as a junior. And we were able to get these giant baggy shorts, all anybody cared about.
Allen Iverson and one.
And I know that change and they come in and I knew all those things would happen. Heck, Brock's wearing capri pants today.
Yep.
So anything is possible. But in a million years, I did not think I would ever see a boys' high school basketball team wearing shorts as tight and as short as the ones those guys were wearing.
Ooh, getting old.
I cannot believe it.
You should have seen Salk was beside himself.
What? Aren't they wearing? Is he rolling that? Is he trying to make them shorter?
The other team had this tall kid, and every time, we have some video cameras up. Where is this going? YouTube? I guess if you could see me on YouTube right now. Every time after he would shoot, he would like pull his pants up as high as he could. They were up near his nipples.
On the Steve Urkel route.
I've never seen anything like it. I remember playing a lot of basketball, no matter what. Everybody pulling down their shorts, making sure that they had just enough, like, whatever was underneath hanging out. Like, Brock, have things changed that much?
Yes.
Yeah.
Brock, have I gotten that old?
Look, I know I'm getting old, and I truly do understand that fashion will change. For some reason, I figured this one would never change.
You guys, Kyle and Howdy, you guys know this, right? Yes. Over the decade we've all been around?
Yes.
Like, when Salk's mind's blown, it's so awesome to be around.
So much fun.
And it's so much fun. It is like the most, it's invigorating.
It is childlike wonder.
It is. It is. And to watch him like, whoa. What?
Whoa. What? Yeah. You guys see this? You gotta be kidding me.
What? Like Jim Mora. What?
Hold on.
What?
Rewind. What? Start it again.
What is Jim Mora?
Brock Heward.
That was the whole warm-ups. You couldn't even stay for the game. You had to go. Like, I'm out.
All right. So we tell a funny story. I got to tell you a couple quick things. So since you're talking about kids, Avery, you know, I love Avery, but I had to teach her something at her birthday party the other day that I was not aware you would ever have to teach a kid. I had to teach her how to blow out candles.
Oh, she's old.
She's 8.
Had she never seen it?
I don't know, but she was trying to blow them out like
inhaling?
By wheezing.
Like, what do you mean?
She was going like...
Oh, no, Avery, no one wants that cake.
She goes to the cake, we light all the candles, and she goes... It took her like 12 tries to blow out 8 candles. So we kind of let it go. And afterwards, I said, Avery, remind me later. We're going to practice blowing out candles. So we get home. I put some candles in a little piece of cake for her, and I lit them. And I was like, okay, now you got to take some air into your cheeks here with, like, you know. And so she just aims not at the candles. I'm like, no, you've got to aim at the candles you're trying to blow out. She's so smart, and there are things where you're just like, I can't believe I have to teach this.
So do you think the practice was justifiable now, or yes. Would it be better used like next January?
Next year, I have a note in my calendar for next year that pops up a little before her birthday and says, remind Avery how to blow out candles. So that is that is on my list. All right. Are we out of time? So you're not going to get the story of how my parents are getting old?
No, we'll do that
and
next
Brock
week.
Has started putting his jacket on and gathering his stuff. Like, this is the usual.
No. I'm tired of people pacing around here. Like, we've had like 50-year backs to everybody.
Time to go.
Everyone's pacing, needing the space.
All right. We got to go. We're working on some fun guests here over the course of the next few weeks and months. So we'll do a lot of different things. This may actually be more podcasty in the next couple of weeks and months. We'll see if Howdy has his way. There'll be some more podcasty stuff.
Well, you didn't tease this one.
Huh?
You didn't tease any segment.
All right, coming up next. All right, we got to go. Have a great rest of your week, everybody. Until next week, the Hay.
Barnes.
See you, everybody.
Go Chiefs. Get to the chopper!